Welcome back to Public Address Radio on Radio Live. You might think that researching and writing a book about chocolate is a pretty sweet gig, pun intended. But for Stephanie Everett, it's all in a day's work. Stephanie owns and runs boutique chocolate manufacturer Devonport Chocolates. Her book, For the Love of Chocolate, is half history, half recipe book, so you can learn while you cook. Stephanie Everett joins us now. Welcome, Stephanie. Look, the book is called For the Love of Chocolate, A Kiwi Indulgence. Is chocolate a particularly Kiwi indulgence?
No, not particularly Kiwi. It's a worldwide indulgence.
So why does it say Kiwi then?
Because we've talked a lot about the history of chocolate in New Zealand and
how
it got here.
It does seem like we do have a sort of special affinity. I mean, we do have chocolate brands that are very much ours.
Yes, we do.
It's not something that we just have import from overseas. I mean, we've got plenty of that as well. I mean, all the chocolate obviously comes from overseas.
Well, we have 30 handmade chocolate companies in New Zealand. And that is probably about 28 more than there were in 1990.
Have our palates become more sophisticated?
Definitely, definitely. When we first bought the business in 1999, and it was mainly dark chocolate, people said, oh, you'll go broke doing dark chocolate. But that is a complete fallacy, and more New Zealanders prefer dark chocolate.
Me, I do.
Because there's this great sort of rumour around that dark chocolate is actually really, really good for you.
Well, it is actually quite.
In excess?
Well, I don't actually know if you can have too much of it. There is cocoa butter, cocoa and sugar in dark chocolate, and that's really all that should be in there. And the sugar, if you have a 70% dark cocoa solids chocolate bar, only 30% of that will be sugar. So it's very hard to eat that to excess.
Is there a maximum decent cocoa level? Because I think people do try and, you know, one-up each other by having the 85% cocoa. Is there a point where it gets ridiculous?
Well, it depends what you're using it for. I would use those very high levels for cooking with meat, for example. But it's very dry, can be quite acidic. It's not smooth and it's not mellow.
I reckon that once you actually start eating a cocoa bean, that's when you realise that your level of cocoa has probably gone high enough, eh? As long as it still looks like chocolate, it's probably all right. You mentioned cooking with meat. Now, this is something that, like pineapple on a pizza, is going to divide a lot of people, I suspect, in this interview. The idea that chocolate and meat, you know, sweet and savoury, should actually go anywhere near each other. I've had chocolate before when I went to Martin Bosley's restaurant in Wellington. And it was amazing what chocolate and meat together tastes like.
Well, that's how it first started in way back in the Olmecs and the Mayans. They had drinks and they put chocolate with their meat. And they mixed it with corn too. It was probably pretty raw, pretty crude and floating in cocoa butter, which is the chocolate flat, sort of fat that we get in it. But fascinating. And then, of course, they started adding chili to it and some of their native flowers and so on. Because I really like chocolate with meat, or I tend to use a very dark cocoa because that's pretty well fat-free, but it gives an enormously rich depth to lamb shanks, to venison, rabbit. In other countries, rabbit's quite traditional.
Baby back ribs.
I'm going to do that. where is chocolate grown and where is the actual chocolate? Where is cocoa grown and where is the actual chocolate made?
Well, it's called the cacao tree. Yeah, and Cocoa theobroma is the botanical name. It grows 20 degrees either side of the equator in a climate that does not drop below 16 degrees overnight. So if you put a band or a circle around the equator, that's more or less where it grows. So Papua New Guinea, Malaysia have cocoa. Samoa and Fiji, quite a lot of the Pacific Islands have plantations. Then, of course, the top of Africa, it is believed to have originated in the Orinoco Basin in Venezuela.
So what form do you buy it in, and the most specialty chocolate providers? You don't buy in cocoa beans, do you?
No, we are not big enough to buy cocoa beans and go through the conching process. We probably would be forbidden in Devonport because it's large and noisy and you have to roast things and winnow them. But we buy the big slabs that are about 8 centimetres thick, 5 kilo slabs, and melt from there.
I've seen cocoa beans from Fiji in my local supermarket. I have no idea what I would do with them. Is there anything that ordinary folks can do with them?
You remove the shell and you eat the nib, which is what the inside is called. Hopefully they've been roasted. Otherwise,
what do they taste
it's
like?
A pretty sharp experience. It's like a mouth of meal.
Right. So this is getting back to what we were saying about the what the ancient Mayans would have drunk, a kind of crushed up, watered down version of that with a bit of chili in there.
Well, they would have ground that.
Yeah.
And then they would have mixed it and beaten it and whipped it, and they often added maize that they did the same thing to. And then they poured it from a long height from one vessel to another to produce what they called foam, which they really prized.
The earliest version of a cappuccino.
Very much so.
you say that the Mayans would have sort of turned their nose up at our sort of idea of a hot chocolate, a sweet, sticky kind of, you know, affair.
Boring, they probably would have thought it was. They had no concept of milk with it, and they added very little sugar. They added a little honey.
But lots of herbs and spices.
And the Mayans had it hot, the Aztecs had it cold. Yeah, they have different ways of handling it.
Russell, we were saying before, you know, how our tastes have changed in high cocoa and things like that. In terms of the flavours of, chocolates that you actually make and sell in the shop, they do start to get quite weird, don't they?
It's quite fun.
What would be the more out there ones that you've got?
Well, probably the most out there one that we have got at the moment is our Horopito and Bush Honey. We're also putting in a raspberry and black pepper with white and dark chocolate in a tablet form. We've been experimenting a little bit lately, and the staff have come up with some interesting things. The most popular flavours throughout the world are caramel and strawberry and hazelnut.
Right, so that's all pretty standard, isn't
it? 'Cause,
I mean, I've seen at chocolate places around the country, I've seen wasabi, and I've seen, getting that spice, that chili in there. Now, this is something, as you say, it's very traditional, but it's something that 10 years ago we would have thought, what the hell? Now you can buy it in a supermarket, you can buy chili chocolate. Mm.
Chili and lime especially work well together.
Has this been more common overseas, and it's just something that we've, apart from, you know, historically in South America, has this been common throughout, say, Europe? Or
yes. Yes, throughout the world people have started experimenting more. It was very traditional in Europe and still can be. But the Americans started really experimenting. Some things are just too wacky and weird, and you have a go and then you think, oh, no, perhaps not that. And you do have to keep your core of favourites, but there's always people that are wanting to try that, something that's a little bit different.
Because if you came home with a box of chockies for your loved one and it was all wasabi and rosemary and whatnot, you might get to clip around the ear.
My darling won't do that stuff at all.
Yeah.
Doesn't like the pepper and the chocolate. But I have to ask, I read a news story recently that talked about the potential for a shortage of chocolate internationally and a spike in prices. Do you think that's going to happen?
Well, I just read in the Herald this morning that the prices dropped. So that's excellent. It was partly because of the Ivory Coast War and partly because we're eating more throughout the world than we have done in the past, and also because it's more profitable to plant a palm oil plantation. So some of the traditional cacao tree plantations are changing over to other crops that are quicker to grow and not so fussy.
Are consumers also demanding fair trade chocolate?
To a degree. In New Zealand, because I think we're much closer to our agricultural roots and perhaps a bit more realistic, we don't always demand fair trade. We select a few things and do them in fair trade. We can't do everything in fair trade because we can't get that much fair trade chocolate on a regular basis. It's also much more expensive. The Cocoa Initiative that started in 1992 is making big inroads in checking that children are going to school and so on. But yes, it's still a problem, and yes, the demand for fair trade is becoming more prevalent.
How much chocolate are you going to sell at Easter?
Oh, tons.
What's bigger, Valentine's Day or Easter?
Oh, Easter's the chocolate season.
Right. Now, look, the book is wonderful. It's half history and New Zealand history, as well as the history of chocolate in general, and half recipes. Recipes in there for anyone to make?
Yes. Well, we did actually want them to make them really accessible so that the average householder
I'm looking at mousse au chocolat and thinking that that those little cupcakes, little chocolate cupcakes with chocolate mousse in them, look exactly what I need.
A little bunny ears made of chocolate. Yum.
Well, I'll think it's a success, the book, if I go visit a household and it's smeared with butter and chocolate.
It's the mark of any good cookbook.
Yeah. Wonderful. Thank you very much for your time, Stephanie.
Thank you.
That's Stephanie Everett, whose book, For the Love of Chocolate, is in all good bookstores. Now, after the break, how international law deals with the tricky area of climate change and computers want me dead.